to the Jeff Blumenkrantz Songbook Podcast, episode I don't know what. It's been so long since I've done one of these, but I have the best reason to come back into the podcasting world, and that is my incredible special guest today. I had the distinct privilege of working with her for many months last year, and I'm so excited to introduce the star of Bright Star, the bright star of Bright Star, Ms. Carmen Cusack.
That wasn't corny at all, Jeff.
I warned her that this was going to be really corny, and I think I came through personally.
You did, totally.
Carmen,
hello, my love.
Hi, thank you so much for being here and learning one of my songs.
It's so fun. It's so cool that you're doing this. I'm so happy to be here.
This is sort of my old life reborn.
When was the last time you did one of these?
I think it was 2012.
What?
Really? I know.
This is since then?
Yeah.
Since then. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I feel incredibly special. Thank you so much.
Oh, please. I've been longing for this. I didn't have the guts to ask you when we were doing the show because you were slightly
busy.
Burdened.
Yes, a little bit busy.
But I want to ask you all the questions.
All of them. Ask me all of them.
Well, I mean, first of all, welcome to New York, sort of. I mean, I know it's not your first day in New York, but
yeah.
You're kind of a semi-newbie.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's what I think is so interesting about your career is that you arrived in New York fully bloomed. I mean, you had amassed this incredible pile of experience and credits elsewhere,
mm-hmm.
and then you just kind of, it's like a joke. Your Broadway debut garnered you every nomination there was. And, how did you go?
I consider myself really lucky that I had a chance to go elsewhere and figure out how you do this, because it's kind of hard, you know, to just show up on the doorstep of Broadway and open a show and be the lead in that show, and then all of a sudden realize that your face is going to be plastered on big, massive, you know, crazy, huge posters, and then you're going to have to be doing like live TV interviews alongside the likes of someone like Steve Martin and Edie Brickell with you. And I'm just so lucky that I got the opportunity to just get a little bit weathered and a little bit experienced and have a little bit of just a bit more swagger with me on this journey, because otherwise I'd probably shit my pants. Luckily, I moved around and saw some of the world before all this kind of slapped me upside my face. So
yeah, I had the pleasure of seeing your concert at 54 Below last year, and
yeah.
You told so many great stories about your journey to that day,
mm-hmm.
and I kind of want, can you tell some of those? Can you tell like your audition for Phantom Story? And
oh, yeah. Well, I hadn't even finished college and I became a child bride. I couldn't finish college because I couldn't afford, I had an opera scholarship, but I couldn't finish college because I still, it was the best scholarship, but it wasn't a full scholarship. And so I was struggling financially. So I got a gig on the QE2 and then I met a piano player, a jazz pianist. I mean, I think I wasn't even drinking age yet. I was like really straight off the, yeah, it was
Wait,
crazy.
Wait, you were married already?
No, I wasn't married.
Oh, okay,
I was. I hadn't even finished college,
okay.
But I had to go get a job and save up to finish my college,
okay.
Of course, that I never did.
Mm-hmm.
that's another story. But I got on the ship and I got friendly with a piano player that worked with us in our shows and also with the band. And his name was Alistair Cusick, hence the last name. Of course, I changed the spelling as soon as we divorced, which is 4.5 years later. We were both too young and stupid, but we tried to give it a go. And to be honest with you, I couldn't imagine going back to Texas. I just kind of got a taste of the world being on cruising the QE2 on the ship. And I wasn't ready to go back to Texas. I just wanted to continue exploring and just exploring my options. And one of those options was to get married to this Mancunian, which means a guy from Manchester. That's what I would
really?
Say. That's my definition of it.
Wait, did you make up that word or did is
I
that a real word?
I don't know. Did I make up that word? Maybe I did. I don't know.
Well, I mean,
I guess we'll have to look it up.
Yeah, seriously. And there are some interesting
words. It
does
sound very exotic, doesn't it? Mancunian.
Like the Mancunian candidate.
Yeah, oh, there you go. Oh, no. It's probably got nothing to do. Then I'm making, I've totally made that up. But yeah, so he was from Manchester. And so we just, I decided to just crazily, you know, storm into that concept of getting married at a child, as a child still. And then I stayed married to him for 4.5 years. And, but the, so the marriage didn't last, but the work in the West End came up, and it became kind of a, you know, the first gig we ever did was a 3-month stint in Dubai.
Wow.
We played a duo gig, and I, on average, sang 35 songs a night, everything from Whitney Houston to Elton John to Rick Astley and all this.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, crazy, crazy times. And but then I managed to, we got back to Manchester, Shaw, near Oldham. Is what it was called. You know at that point in your address, when you have to say what you're near, that you're in boo-honk, diddly-dunk town. That's where his parents lived, and so we shacked up with them for a minute till we got ourselves sorted with a place to become a married couple. And through that journey, I opened up the paper, and there was a cattle call for Phantom of the Opera. And I knew all the songs. I'd just never seen the show. Never seen a show before, ever. I just knew the songs, and I, being trained as a coloratura in opera, that was just an easy fit, you know, singing those Christine Daae songs from Phantom of the Opera. So I showed up at a cattle call in the middle of Manchester, and it was pissing it down with rain. And I sat out there all day, and then they shuffled me in, and the director, after I sang a couple songs, he asked me if I could come back the next day and do some scene work, but he wanted me to see the show. Had you seen this? Carmen, have you seen the show? And I was like, no, I haven't. And he said, well, we'd like you to see it tonight. And I was like, I don't have any money. I said, oh, don't bother, we'll usher you in. So I saw a show for the first time in my life, and the next day I got the gig.
That's crazy.
That was a long-winded.
But it's like so different from, you know, most of us who grew up hungry for this theater thing and just seeing everything and like knowing the entire work of, you know, whomever, Sondheim, Rodgers.
No, it works best for me not to know anything about a project. Ignorance is bliss.
You are such an incredible performer. We used to watch you and Paul Alexander Nolan in rehearsals and just like sob.
Really?
I mean, you, I have to say, you in that Bright Star rehearsal process were so fully committed. Like how full out you were every step of the way kind of flies in the face of how most people do it, like preserving and careful, and I'm gonna wait until, you know, later in the process to start, you know, bringing the full guns. You were like full guns day one every time. And so,
well, because I knew that, from the opening, I'm sorry, did I interrupt?
No, go, go.
I knew that once this was in front of an audience, I needed to feel those feelings and not be ashamed or be scared of those feelings, because I was going to have to do it 8 times a week. And I wanted to be in present and in the moment always. And that's important to me. And I didn't care about anything else. I cared about my cast, and I cared about the people that, you know, all the creatives. I cared what they thought, but I didn't care about, you know, was I looking after myself. I don't care. That's the last thing that comes after the whole thing. And, you know, and at some point my body's just going to say, well, that was stupid of you, Carmen. You have to care about your body. And yes, it's important to do that. But this particular show vocally was like breathing for me. It was the easiest singing job role that I've ever had, so that I could put that to the side and just really develop the emotion and the passion and the character and have that full journey every time. And that I had the luxury of not worrying about my voice was special.
Yeah, I mean, the singing aside, you also did a lot of screaming and crying. And
I find that if you don't think about it and just stay relaxed and in the moment,
yeah,
you don't hurt yourself. It's kind of like being in a car crash. Like if you know it's happening, everything tenses up and you injure yourself further.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't allow your head to get beyond, in front of it, and you just allow your body to just go with it. I don't hurt myself when I do it that way.
You clearly didn't. I mean,
be present.
You screamed your head off and then you sang like a dream the entire run. It was amazing.
Thank you.
And the other thing I'm very curious about is your educational background in classical voice.
Mm-hmm.
You are one of the most present, connected actors I've ever worked with.
Oh my God. Coming from you, one of the most amazing songs. Your songs are so present and active and just take me from laughter to crying. Mm. So for you to say that's me, thank you. That means a lot.
Thank you. And so where did that come from? I mean, do you remember, like, was there a day when that wasn't the case and then a day when you were like, oh, a light bulb. My job is to be like that present and that connected.
Do you know, I think I put it down to, and I'm not even religious anymore, but I put it down to church, to gospel. I think that's where it comes from. I think.
Because you were singing?
Because I was singing from a place that I can't even describe, a faith. And it felt, and it was so personal to me that I wasn't thinking about anything else, but just maybe it was a God or whatever you find that is so personal and powerful to yourself, love, passion, whatever that is, love. I would like to call it love at this point because I don't consider myself heavily religious at all. But as a child growing up in a very highly religious background, sing for Jesus, sing for God. And whatever that might be to somebody, just don't sing for anybody else. Sing for you. Sing from your heart. So it was a fearlessness there and a freedom there that I think I was able to tap into and carry with me, even though I'm no longer religious. There are certain aspects of why any of us go down the journeys that have been put through what we've been put through is to make them, make us who we are. And, you take with those bits what's going to help you survive and make you better.
Mm.
And certainly church, there were certain bits of church that I will thank God I had that.
Cool. So when you look back at the last, I don't know how many years, your professional career since you started professionally acting, are there obvious highlights?
My first highlight was, getting to get my first gig, Christine, in Phantom of the Opera. That was a really cool experience. And then the traveling that was involved, I then literally the day I finished playing that role, I got the role in Les Mis as understudy Fantine. And I was happy to go back into a position of understudy because I didn't want to be boxed in that corner of, because you can imagine a Christine Daae, the next role she would get in a Les Mis would be
Cosette.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I didn't want to get boxed in. So I asked my MD at the time, what could I do for them to just kind of shake their brains a little bit? And he said, well, sing, because he'd heard me do karaoke one night and I was singing Whitney Houston. I was belting something. He said, well, go sing a belt, do a belt, show them your belt, and then that will confuse them. And so I showed them my belt and they said, well, gosh darn it. No, they didn't say gosh darn it. They said, the only opportunity we see you now is Fantine, but we only have an understudy position for you right now. Would you be interested? And I was like, yeah, I'd be more interested in understudying Fantine than slotting in as Cosette because I don't want to get boxed in to any particular ingenue type thing.
Yeah.
So that's what happened. And so that was kind of cool that I was able to kind of change directions. And then from there, it became more of an open, people saw me to be able to do, various things. And then I guess Wicked, it bringing me back to the States was really exciting. Oh, and I got to work for the Shakespeare Company in back in England. We did Secret Garden.
What did you play?
That was really cool. Sorry?
What did you play?
I played Rose,
nice.
Lily's
sister, right?
Yeah. I really enjoyed working in that company. But yeah, coming back here and working for Bartlett with South Pacific, I didn't realize how much of a big hoo-ha he was. I'd literally just come into town, and so I didn't know. But as soon as he hired me, things started to, yeah.
This is Bartlett Sher, who directed the tour of South Pacific in which Carmen played.
He also
Nelly.
Directed the Lincoln Center,
yes,
South Pacific, and then the first national tour.
Oh, among 10 million other things. Oh, no, he's a superstar.
Yeah, and of course I didn't see myself as a Nellie Forbush at all after playing Elphaba in Wicked. But, you know, I guess he saw me in that way. So thank goodness, yeah. I love that role.
That's what's so interesting about your trajectory. It's so surprising, and it you kind of defy type vocally and, you know, spiritually. And it's personified so perfectly in that medley you did in your concert. Carmen tears through. Okay, it starts out with Think of Me, and she's pretty much singing full versions of all of these songs. Nonstop. It goes from Think of Me into I Dreamed a Dream,
yeah.
Into, was it The
Wizard and I?
Yeah.
There's several roles I didn't manage to accomplish in that medley, but we would have been there all night.
And also back to before.
Yeah.
Where did you do ragtime?
I did ragtime at the Milwaukee Rep.
Oh, right. Well, that, I mean, just the fact that you could sing those four songs without a break, it was dazzling.
Yeah, my throat was like, by the time it was, I was so dry by the time I finished that medley, the first time I actually sang it. But it's a strong medley. I'm going to keep it in the repertoire.
Oh,
now.
It's so great. It's so great.
Thanks.
I think maybe it's time for you to sing a song of
mine. Okay.
So let me just tell you listeners a little bit about this song. This is from one of the many abandoned musicals of Jeff Blumenkrantz. This show was called Hashi, and it was a project I was working on with the wonderful writer, Beth Blatt. And it was loosely inspired by Pollyanna. So, and similarly, that Pollyanna is about a spinster who gets custody of her estranged sister's orphaned niece. This one was about, it takes place today, in New York City, and a kind of hard businesswoman gets custody of her estranged hippie sister's nephew, who was raised abroad in
Say that really fast.
Which, yeah, really. Hashi is the name of the boy. He was raised in Africa and Southeast Asia, I think. And so this the aunt, who's the main character of the show, she knows, she has no information. She hasn't seen her sister in years. She's never met the child. And she's just found out that the sister has died. And this child is going to be deposited at her doorstep any day. And this is what she sings. It's called Nothing's Gonna Change. And here is Carmen Cusack singing it.
I don't have the time to help him with his homework. I don't have the time to keep him entertained. Dear God, I hope this kid is potty trained. 'Cause I don't have the time, and that's not gonna change. I have no desire to bake him special goodies. I have no desire to make him dinner every night. He better not have a big appetite, 'cause I've got no desire, and that's not gonna change. Guardians guard, mother's mother. One thing has nothing to do with the other. Who says I have to get involved? Keep it impersonal, problem solved. No PTA, no playing ball, no little height marks to mess up my wall, no furry critters, no matter how small, 'cause nothing's gonna change at all.
speak Swahili. What if he's bratty, chatty, a fatty? What if he's shy and quiet? What if he's on some weirdo diet? What if he has bad hair? And what if she screwed him up beyond? I don't have the urge to read him bedtime stories. I don't have the urge to feed him chicken soup. If he wants support, then he can join a group. 'Cause I don't have the urge, and that's not gonna change. Mother's mother, guardian's guard. One thing's impossible, one's just hard. I'll take the latter, short and sweet. Just provide a place to sleep and eat. But I'm not the type to stroke or cuddle. I don't subscribe to that motherhood twaddle. I pity the kid who has me as a model. 'Cause I don't have the urge and I don't have the time to be at his beck and call. And that's not gonna change. No, nothing's gonna change.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for writing it.
Oh, please.
It's fun.
I'm just so happy to have you here, and I'm like, was looking, what can I pull out to make Carmen sing? So
There's so many. It was hard to decide.
Well, thanks for singing that. It's ever great. So what's coming up for Carmen Cusack?
Oh, bits and bobs.
Yeah, I love when you throw in these little Britishisms. Every once in a while, she will come out with a fully articulated British accent or some kind of...
I thought, isn't it bits and bobs American thing too?
Nah, no? I mean, like, well, you
I get
hear
confused
it,
nowadays.
You hear it every once in a while. But what'd you say about raining before? Pissing down?
Pissing down, the rain. It was pissing it down.
Pissing it down. Yeah, that's so British.
That is very British. I will agree with that. Let's see. April 15th, I have a Pete Seeger tribute at the Kennedy Center. I've been asked to sing a couple of songs with a legendary banjo player, Tony Trischka.
Why would you ever be in with a banjo player?
Right? someone by the name of Steve Martin might have introduced me to him.
Does he play the banjo? I'm kidding.
Yeah, and it's kind of a cool lineup of Judy Collins and Roseanne Cash and just
fancy.
A lot of Peter and Paul. And Mary, Peter, Paul, Mary.
Yeah.
They're going to be there. So it's kind of a cool lineup.
Nice.
At the Kennedy Center,
Fancy.
April 15th.
Yes. Have you ever played the Kennedy Center?
I wonder, have you? Have you ever played the Kennedy Center? And then literally, I think the next day, the 16th, I'm back at the at Feinstein's, 54 Below in New York City, to do another one of my shows.
Oh, this is the makeup concert.
This is the makeup concert that got, canceled from the blizzard. That Stella canceled.
Stella,
darn you. so I'll be doing that.
Nice.
And then we have a gig.
Oh, don't we, though?
Oh, I can't wait. Can't wait. You want to talk about it?
You know I do. Carmen is coming to my kind of hometown, Deal, New Jersey, where we'll be sharing a bill at the Carmen and Jeff show.
I'm so excited.
Me too, at the Axelrod Arts Center. And if you go to my website, there'll be a link for tickets for that. But we don't know exactly what it's going to be, but it's going to be all of us. And so I can't wait to share that
with you. We got to learn a few duets.
I know.
Yeah.
I'll even sing songs I didn't write.
All right. Okay. Ooh, now my mind's going crazy. Okay, yes. That'd be awesome. That's a deal.
Sweet. Well, thank you again so much for learning the song, coming to my house.
It was fun.
Letting me reignite this podcast. And can't wait to be on stage with you again.
I know. To and share this, the light again.
Yes. Break a leg at the Kennedy Center.
Thank
and
you.
Thanks again for being here.
My pleasure.
This is Jeff and Carmen saying bye-bye.
Bye-bye.